When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series, a smart TV built by the streaming pros.
There's a lot happening these days. But I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters, without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Oh, but there's one that I really loved, and let me just see if I can find it quickly.
In April of 2022, I met photographer Jean Pagliuzzo at her downtown Manhattan studio.
You wouldn't think, I mean, it wasn't. Oh, this was Anna's favorite, though. That's the one she liked.
That's her looking through the work she did with Anna Wintour in the 70s.
Anna was on this shoot, and she was up at 4 on those days, and she would have everything lined up, and everything was perfect no matter where we went.
Jean was one of the few female fashion photographers working in the 1970s. And side note, Jean's in her 80s now, still working as a photographer, and still cool as hell. Back in the day, she was one of Anna's go-to photographers for whatever fashion spread she was working on at the time. Because of this, Jean got a rare glimpse of one of the most famous women in fashion history. Before she was, well, the most famous woman in fashion history.
She'd come to breakfast, wow. And she looked incredible the whole time. I was taken aback because I can't work looking nice.
Jean pulls up a few images from the shoot that she and Anna did together in Puerto Rico back in 1977.
This is Puerto Rico, and we just run out of ideas.
On this particular shoot, Jean and Anna are struggling. None of the locations they'd originally scouted are working, and Anna doesn't like their model, and they don't know what to shoot. It's a bad day. They risk leaving this expensive trip with nothing usable, until Jean has an idea.
I said, look, we're running out of things here. Let's go to the other end of the island. I hear it's kind of interesting there.
She and Anna pull up to a fire station on the other side of the island. Outside, there's a bunch of guys standing around watching a literal cockfight. Jean's thrilled.
Well, maybe we could just get the fighting cocks in there and the, you know.
Jean and Anna labor over setting up the shot. And their work pays off. Jean shows me photo after photo of this scene. The model has a blank look, which is maybe why Anna wasn't really into her. But because she's surrounded by these fighting birds, the blankness, it works. The shoot's smart, tongue-in-cheek, high fashion, gorgeous. It's honestly one of Viva Magazine's more striking photo spreads, which isn't surprising considering that most of Anna Wintour's shoots were stunning during her tenure as fashion editor of the magazine. Anna comes to Viva during a tumultuous time. Its identity crisis is hitting a breaking point, and its readership numbers are in free fall. And in a scramble to try to keep the lights on, Bob Guccione and Kathy Keaton are throwing anything they can against the wall to see if it will stick. And Anna Wintour, she's one of Bob and Kathy's final Hail Marys. But was Anna enough to save Viva? And was she even up for the task? Back in Puerto Rico, it was hard for Jean to tell.
What Anna would do is, you know, I'd be totally, finally get the thing set up. Polaroid was right, start shooting, and all of a sudden she would just disappear. She'd just walk away. Now you could say that was trust, or you could say that was boredom. I didn't know which it was.
I'm Jennifer Romolini, and this is Stiffed, Episode 7, Winter of Their Discontent.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have supervision, enhanced hearing, extraordinary reflexes, to be, dare we say, superhuman? Well, Roku's new Pro Series TV can't do any of that for you. But with a 4K screen, side-firing speakers, and a blazing fast refresh rate, it'll sure feel like it. Elevate your entertainment using all your favorite apps like iHeart and play all your music, radio, and podcasts with the new Roku Pro Series. Your senses aren't better. Your TV is.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
Act 1, Cockfight. 73 things that turn a man on. Celebrity food fetishes. 50 ways to meet rich men. An astrological guide to gift giving. You never, ever have to break a nail again. No, those are not headlines from an old Cosmo magazine you found in your dentist's office. They're from Viva in 1976. By this time, Viva looks nothing like the smart, progressive, feminist porn magazine it was under editors like Betty Jane and Patty Bosworth and Annie Gottlieb. Instead of being a magazine with dicks, it's now all about how to catch one. The stories are heavily gendered, now more about money and class, how to marry a rich guy, even a story about how to buy a mink coat. Like the decade when it was published, Viva's gone from being an early 70s magazine about sexual pleasure to a late 70s magazine about the pleasures of capitalism. Ironically, though, Viva's capital is actually withering. The magazine is understaffed, and it's starved for resources, too. Here's editor Robin Wollaner.
You know, it looked like we were a glossy magazine, but I was basically given an inventory of articles that had been assigned and purchased by my predecessors. And we had like almost no budget for new articles. So we had to take those articles and make something of them.
And to make things worse, Bob's up to his old tricks again. filling Viva's pages with his penthouse photography leftovers, and hiring more and more male writers like Henry Miller, who writes an essay in Viva about hating the women's liberation movement and how it's, quote, harmful for women to become immersed in politics. For a man who is known for betting on himself and winning, Bob's hitting a period of, well, not quite winning anymore, especially with his non-penthouse projects.
Bob had wanted to start a magazine called Bravo, which was going to be more porn, and they would never use that word, but more risque than penthouse. And the atmosphere was changing.
These trends don't please some members of the feminist community, who charge that pornography, which shows women in postures of sexual subjugation, can lead its consumers to commit violent acts against unwilling women and children.
The atmosphere is that the anti-porn movement is coming after Bob in a bigger and bigger way. We're talking court cases. The heat is on, and it's a climate that makes Bob feel like a new, more explicit version of penthouse might not be the best idea.
So he didn't think he could launch Bravo at that point, but he had already hired an editor, a guy named Ernie Baxter.
So now Ernie, this brand new, expensive male editor, doesn't have anything to edit. So they think, what the hell? Let's just give him Viva. When this man, who had never edited a women's magazine before, starts his job at Viva, he does what many bosses do when they start a new gig. He calls a meeting.
And he gathers his all-female team, editorial team, together, and he says, you know, I know I'm probably an unusual choice for this. You know, after all, you know, I only know what it's like to fuck and not to be fucked.
Classy, right? And for Robin, who'd worked for Bob and Kathy since her teens, since Viva started, this is it, the final misogyny straw.
And I resigned. And Kathy made a huge play to keep me, and I wouldn't. And that was really hard.
And not too long after Robin resigns, this guy ends up getting fired anyway. Which is all indicative of a much bigger structural issue at Viva that's been there the whole time. Here's Viva and Penthouse editor Peter Block.
One of the problems was that Bob and Kathy would just switch editors too often. You know.
With each new executive editor or managing editor, no matter the title, they're always the second in command under Kathy's top spot on the masthead. With each of these new editors comes a shift in Viva's tone. Sometimes Viva's feminist, sometimes, like with the Henry Miller essay, it's decidedly not. Sometimes it's a gussied up, feminized penthouse. Sometimes it's inexplicably a magazine dedicated to paranormal events. It's identity whiplash. The magazine sorely needs an anchor, someone with vision.
Her name is Anna Wintour.
Anna Wintour rules the $300 billion.
She has had the guts and the intelligence.
She is the most famous fashion journalist in the world.
Now, you most likely know Anna Wintour from her 35 years and counting as editor-in-chief of Vogue. But in 1976, Anna Wintour's not a fashion icon yet. True, she's already got her signature bob, and she's even wearing dark sunglasses, often inside. But when Anna first comes in for an interview at Viva, she's mostly just a 27-year-old UK transplant, an out-of-work junior magazine person looking for her second U.S. job.
She had just been fired from Harper's Bazaar, and that was the first staff job she got after moving to New York from London in 1975.
That's Anna Wintour's biographer, Amy O'Dell. Amy's book, Anna, came out in 2022.
And landing at Harper's Bazaar, you know, she was very driven even at that point in her 20s to be editor-in-chief of Vogue. And I'm sure she thought that, you know, she was at Harper's Bazaar, that was Vogue's number one competitor, and that would springboard her. And it didn't. It really ended in disaster.
The disaster was that Harper's Bazaar thought Anna didn't understand how to appeal to an American audience. And they fired her for it. So with a bit of stain on her resume and something to prove, Anna goes job hunting. Viva, which is still understaffed after cleaning house with the penis fiasco and with the swift firing of Ernie, happened to be looking for a new fashion and beauty editor. Anna applies, and she impresses Bob and Kathy right from the start. They scoop her up. Here's Bob Guccione Jr.
She was very young, and the impression of her was very bright. You know, she was from England, sort of that kind of English luster to her, and, you know, charming and, you know, witty and acerbic. And expensive tastes, you know, everybody did think highly of her.
Now, Anna Wintour politely declined to be interviewed for this podcast. She wasn't interested in discussing her 2 years working at Viva, which was, frankly, not a surprise. Here's Amy.
Anna never talks about her time at Viva. People speculate that she's ashamed of the connection to a magazine that published male nudity, that was a competitor to Playgirl.
To be fair, it is a little odd to imagine Anna Wintour, the fashion titan we all know today, mixing it up with sleazy pornographers. But whether she likes to acknowledge it or not, Viva is inarguably Anna Wintour's breakout job.
I think it's such an important job for her, and it's almost sad that she doesn't talk about it, because this is when you can see her style start to come out. And I think that the early Vivas, if you look at her fashion spreads, they definitely resemble some of the things that we're accustomed to seeing in Vogue magazine.
Anna's taste is already unimpeachable. She has an eye for young design talent, and she knows how to tell stories through fashion to really sell the clothes. And even though she's not famous yet, when she's brought in to head up Viva's fashion and beauty section, there's a buzz about her as soon as she arrives. Here's Penthouse PR director Leslie Jay.
I was there when Anna Wintour started working there, and it was a big deal. And then she came. She always had a fresh bouquet of flowers delivered to her every single day. She looked like a ragamuffin. I mean, that she turned into Vogue is amazing. She wore outlandish clothes I would never wear any of them, but she was the fashion director, you know?
But what Leslie J thought of as ragamuffin is what others might describe as edgy. Anna is sophisticated, well-bred. She's the daughter of the famous British newspaper editor Charles Wintour. She's got her finger on the pulse of fashion, and she's fancier than anyone who's worked at Penthouse or Viva up to this point. Here's editor Pat Linden.
She took the Concorde home to London every single weekend. She would, you know, arrive at work with her shopping bag of her undies or whatever she needed. And then she would come back Monday morning.
After Anna Wintour's brought in, Bob and Kathy quickly expand Viva's fashion section from 4 pages a month to a full 16. It's a big bet on her talent and a last-ditch ploy to turn Viva into a women's magazine that attracts big-money women's fashion ads. Anna's given creative autonomy and free rein to do what she wants with her pages. But that free rein, it costs money.
You know, she came from fashion magazines, and at a fashion magazine, it's customary to pay a messenger to pick up a dress from a designer and bring it to your office. Well, that Viva's not a fashion magazine. Kathy Keaton was not she didn't have that much experience. I don't know how many years of experience she had in magazines when Anna came on. What was it, a few? So she had a few years of experience, you know, just being parachuted into this role as publisher. So she didn't know how things operated, really. And Anna ran things at Viva the way that a fashion magazine would run them, and that was alien to them.
Now, Bob and Kathy weren't in the fashion industry. They were barely real publishing people. So they had no idea of the funding Anna felt was necessary to do her job. Funding which was larger than anyone expected.
You know, this is the thing that Anna came up against early in her career again and again, wanting to do the thing that she wanted to do and not trying to adapt to concerns like budgets. She didn't work that way. She was very single-minded in what she wanted to do.
And what did Anna want to do? Well, from the looks of her first few Viva issues, she wants to establish herself as a real player on the global fashion scene, and she wants to do it fast. To that end, Anna's first Viva fashion shoots are lavish, strategic, and tightly curated. To compete with more established fashion titles, she insists on shooting on location, everywhere from Tokyo to St. Croix. And she often chooses women of color to model, some of the first to appear in Viva, which was more in line with an international audience. And she styles them in designers never seen in the magazine before, mixing old-school French luxury brands like YSL with cutting-edge up-and-comers like Issey Miyake. But mostly, and perhaps this was a response to getting fired from Harper's Bazaar for not understanding American taste, at Viva, Anna uses the most American of American designers. There's never an issue without pieces from, say, Ralph Lauren or Calvin Klein. It's the Anna Wintour taste you know if you've ever paged through Vogue. It's classics with a twist. Whereas Viva's photography had once been a weird, wild romp, under Anna, it's more self-serious. Here's fashion historian Laura Helms.
She brought some forward-thinking sort of fashion knowledge there, but Anna was coming from a sort of traditional publishing background and a traditional fashion background, and so brought more of that into the fashion editorials where there's less fantasy, there's less dreaminess.
Still, Anna's success within Viva's fashion pages is evident right away. And the rest of the industry, including executives at Condé Nast, publisher of Vogue, start taking notice. Here's Viva editor Pat.
Her breakout place was, I think, Viva. That's where she got the attention that put her over, kind of into the running for the big time.
As for Anna herself, whether she's on location in Marrakesh or back in her Manhattan Viva office, she often displays the same kind of over-it-all remove she had with Jean, a smidge of early Devil Wears Prada peeking through. She just wasn't one to play nice with others. From the start, young Anna has a few unmistakable Anna Wintour of today quirks.
I was technically her boss because I was the articles editor. She did not invite any kind of conversation. She did not invite camaraderie.
Pat's often tasked with editing the words that go with Anna's fashion spreads.
We'd pass each other in the hallway, and she'd kind of look down at the floor and get a sort of a little half-smile on her face to acknowledge that I was there, but she was not going to say anything to me. And that was kind of it with her.
And when Anna did deign to engage with her coworkers, she could be just odd. The Viva and Penthouse gangs all hang out after work at a Manhattan restaurant and bar called PJ Clark's.
She would sit there with us when we were all getting, all drinking, and she'd be with her shades and peeling little sugar cubes. We'd be hanging out there, and some of the minions from Penthouse and Viva would come down with layouts. They'd be sitting, like, correcting things, and it's like, how can you even see anything?
Despite these antisocial foibles, Anna's creative vision is unyielding. With the addition of her fashion pages, Viva feels fresh and exciting again. It's a reset. But could this reset be enough to propel Viva to a legitimate women's magazine success? Or was it just too little, too late?
Hello, iHeart listener. We have a confession to make. Both iHeart and this commercial you're listening to right now would probably sound a heck of a lot better on the new Roku Pro Series TV. It's got side-firing speakers that fill your room with sound, Dolby Atmos audio that puts you right in the middle of the entertainment, and the ability to pair seamlessly with your home theater sound systems that already have surround sound and booming bass. If all that sounds too good to be true, it'll sound even better on the new Roku Pro Series. Your hearing isn't better. Your TV is.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us, to crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker? It's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit BARTESIAN.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network. Work.
Act 2, Last Rabbit in the Hat. By 1978, 2 years after doing away with the Dicks, and after 2 years investing in Anna Wintour's fashion vision, Bob and Kathy decide to invest in Viva's editorial again. They give Ginny Kopecky, a smart 27-year-old editor from Ladies' Home Journal, the chance to build a real magazine around Anna's pages. Ginny didn't want to be interviewed live for this podcast, but she did email with me, saying, quote, "I remember that time very fondly. I loved being at Viva while it lasted. It was a great, great time to be a young, single female editor, writer, journalist in New York City. Maybe the best ever." The staff loves Ginny, and they respect her, too.
Well, Ginny was a very, very principled and very good editor.
Even with the challenges, Ginny's super into her new job, and she makes quick work of bringing Viva's original, smart, feminist vision, of course sans dick pics and erotica, back to life. And by the middle of 1978, with Ginny and Anna working their magic, Viva's actually looking kind of great again. There are stories about the epidemic of domestic violence, multi-part packages on abortion, an insightful profile of Eartha Kitt. The magazine, just like at the beginning, is once again staffed with smart editors who have a mission and believe in it. They're trying to turn Viva around, pull off a new trick, the last rabbit in this magazine hat. And editor Ginny's enthusiasm for this new Viva is contagious. Here's Viva editor Pat again.
We're bringing Viva on this new track now. Viva is now going to be a terrific magazine. It's going to be a feminist magazine. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be better than Ms. It's going to be different from Cosmo.
What Ginny and I were saying was like an Esquire, like a feminist Esquire. We wanted to have offer a place where good feminist writers could publish their stuff, get paid well.
That's Viva editor Val Monroe. She and Pat are now working with Ginny to make this vision come to life. And they're having a good time doing it.
And I remember seeing friends, we went to a restaurant, Fiorello's or something, and we went, as I was walking through the restaurant, I saw friends, and how are you? I said, oh God, I'm just so happy. I just love this job. I've never loved a job more.
Thanks in part to Anna Wintour's fashion pages bringing in some clout, and at least a few ads. Kathy and Bob are willing to spend on Viva again. And editors like Pat and Val can afford to bring on whatever writers they want. It's an editor's dream. But there remains one problem at Viva, and it's a big one. It's the problem Viva's had since the start. It's Bob Guccione, of course. Specifically, it's Bob up to his old tricks, flexing creative dominance and trying to reuse his Penthouse Pets photo shoots for Viva's covers.
We did what we could for, 8 months. Like, we were offering decent money and good ideas and telling people, ignore the cover.
But the covers turn out to be not so easy to ignore. And with this strong-willed new team in place, Bob's running into resistance. And so is Kathy, who is often tasked with carrying water for Bob and delivering his orders. Anna is the first to speak out.
They would hear Anna and Kathy Keaton fighting over models, and then they would hear Anna stomping out.
Now, even from the beginning, Viva's cover models rarely made much sense. Sometimes they were celebrities like Bianca Jagger or Shelley Duvall. Sometimes Penthouse Pets. Sometimes just a man's bare ass. But when Anna's at Viva, the covers are mostly her models and her styling. Not elaborate Vogue-like cover shoots, but at least they're outtakes from her fashion spreads. They represent her ideas. Anna's not interested in Bob and Kathy denigrating her extremely specific creative vision with these corny-ass porn covers. And the tasteless Penthouse Pet covers aren't just affecting Anna. Ginny and Val are getting drawn into the battle, too.
And then one day, Bob wanted to put some, like, half-naked, more naked woman on the cover, like in pearls and bosoms or something.
And for many of the female editors, this is somehow a bosom too far. It's so obvious the picture is sloppy Penthouse seconds.
But it's that come hither look in the eyes that is betrays that it's not for women. That's not a woman's magazine face. That's a girly magazine's face.
But Bob's insistent, and Kathy's not stopping him.
And I remember Kathy defending it and saying, it's a beautiful cover. It's a beautiful cover.
And remember, we're in the late 70s now. Things are changing. This isn't Val or Ginny or Pat's first job. And they're confident enough to know it won't be their last. They believe in themselves, in their talent, their integrity and vision. So they stand their ground, or at least some of them do.
Ginny and Val, they were furious, just furious.
It's true. Val talks with Ginny, and they come to a decision.
Ginny and I said, that's it, we're done.
Bob and Kathy don't try to talk them out of it. In fact, Val experienced the opposite. She's basically frog marched out.
Suddenly, there was a bodyguard at my desk, and we were escorted out of the building.
Even in the midst of all this drama, Pat is still holding out hope.
I said that I was not going to join them. And I told them, you know, they were surprised because I had been so involved in the Newsweek thing.
Remember, Pat had been through some serious shit already at Newsweek. She was part of the sexual discrimination lawsuit in 1970. Plus, she actually really loves her job at Viva. So she goes against Ginny and Val.
I remember that they were very angry at me, that they wanted nothing to do with me, basically, after I said that I was not going to join them.
Pat just really wants Viva to finally work. It's so close to working. Viva's her dream job. And like many people in toxic workplaces, she's clinging to a fantasy of how it could be rather than what it is.
A magazine that's trying to get on its feet, trying to change and trying to go in a new direction. And, you know, we can work on that.
So Pat sticks it out. Bosom covers, porn king and all, as Viva enters yet another round of editor musical chairs.
The next thing I can remember is that Helen Irwin was brought in as the new editor.
Helen Irwin becomes at least the sixth editor in just 5 years to hold this second-in-command position at Viva. She's another impulsive Bob and Kathy decision, another potential quick fix.
She depended a lot on me, on my judgment, and I think it was really the two of us.
Until one afternoon, a few weeks later, Helen takes Pat to lunch.
And then I sat down at the table, and Helen said, Pat, I have to tell you something. And I, you know, she was lovely about it. And she said, but they're closing Viva.
Pat's stunned.
There was no inkling at all, and there probably should have been.
Later that week, it's official.
The night that they closed Viva, we were all there late.
Pat and Anna Wintour are two of the last Viva women standing on this Friday night. The night they're told Viva magazine is finally over.
We stayed late, we all got drunk, and we went down to Anna's office, and she was sobbing. She was sobbing. I was very surprised to see that. I guess she thought, you know, here was my great chance, and I had this great thing, and it's all gone.
The editors, crying Anna and all, walked to Kathy's office.
And then we went down, and we saw Kathy, who was sitting in her office, and, you know, say, oh, Kathy. And she held out her arm, her hand, took my hand and some of the others and gave them a squeeze. And she didn't even look up.
Before they leave for good, the editors are looking for some kind of answers, some closure from Kathy.
She smiled in sympathy. She didn't say anything. Nobody was accusing her of anything. It was just, you know, we wanted to see what her reaction would be, and it was that she was very sad, but, you know, that's life kind of thing.
But they're not getting closure from Kathy or anyone. Because understanding the end of Viva and what it all means, it's more complicated than the kind of clear-cut answer the editors want. But a half century later, I think we've gotten pretty close to pinning it down.
Stiffed is an original podcast from iHeartMedia and Crooked Media. It's produced by Crooked Media. It's hosted and written by me, Jennifer Romolini, and produced by Megan Donis. Sydney Rapp is our associate producer. Story editing by Mary Knopf. Music, sound design, and engineering by Hannes Brown. Our fact checker is Julia Paskin. Additional production support from Nafala Kato and Inez Maza. From Crooked Media, our executive producers are Sarah Geismer, Katie Long, and Mary Knopf, with special thanks to Allison Falzetta and Lyra Smith. From iHeartMedia, our executive producers are Beth Ann Macaluso and Julia Weaver.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have supervision, enhanced hearing, extraordinary reflexes, to be, dare we say, superhuman? Well, Roku's new Pro Series TV can't do any of that for you. But with a 4K screen, side-firing speakers, and a blazing fast refresh rate, it'll sure feel like it. Elevate your entertainment using all your favorite apps like iHeart and play all your music, radio, and podcasts with the new Roku Pro Series. Your senses aren't better. Your TV is.
A collision between a Chinese jet and an American spy plane.
He came and rammed into our left wing.
With relations increasingly strained, what are the chances of things spinning out of control?
The Western world was asleep.
I'm Gordon Carrera. I'll be exploring the friction in this most important of relationships and asking, has the West taken its eye off the ball?
You cannot ignore China.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow War, China and the West. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.